This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Janelle George is spending a couple of weeks at the Writers' Colony at Dairy Hollow in Eureka Springs, working on essays about her experiences. George, who is the Illuminating Black Lives Fellowship recipient at Dairy Hollow, is an associate professor of law at Georgetown University. Tomorrow, she'll lead a workshop at the Fayetteville Public Library called Story as Memorial, Writing to Remember. During a conversation this week in Eureka Springs, Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums asked her about that workshop, which she's presenting in collaboration with the Washington County Community Remembrance Project.
I did a little bit of digging on their website and realized that they are working to establish a memorial to three young black men who were lynched in the 1800s. And I was just really struck by that and the significance of memorials. And if we look at the past year of racial reckoning and some of the tearing down of memorials, and what do those mean? What do memorials mean to people? And then I was thinking, how can I connect this with writing? But we also essentially memorialize people and events and experiences through writing as well. And particularly the Black community has such a strong oral history. Story truly can be memorial.
When did you first think about writing, and what inspirations have you had?
Oh, wow. I've always thought about writing, even as a young child. So my mom is a librarian, and I remember, so I draw and write. And so when I was, I want to say third grade, I always wrote stories, and I would write these stories about my classmates, and they always loved them, and they would kind of ask me, hey, can you write a story about me or write a story about this person? So I had about like three or four stories that I would like staple together, and I created what I thought was a library on the side of my desk, and my classmates would literally come by my desk, and this was back in the day when you had the check, and check out my books and like return them back to the little pocket. And so I've always been a writer, and I was really inspired by Beverly Cleary, who just passed away this year, and Judy Blume, and those writers of like the 80s and, you know, my childhood. And they wrote stories about everyday life that just really struck me.
That had to be quite a thrill to have your peers, your classmates come by and check out your books.
You know, actually, it's funny because I haven't thought about that in so long, but it was just natural. It just felt natural to me. Like, this is what I was doing. I loved writing. And at my school, I grew up in Seattle, and the school I went to always emphasized the arts. And so we would have writers come in and talk to our class. I remember actually when Beverly Cleary came, and she held up these, because she hand wrote, drafted some of her early stories, and I remember her holding up this legal paper and saying this was an early draft of one of my books, and that just stuck with me.
So how did writing and love of writing translate into studying law?
You know what it actually did? So I was an English major in undergrad, and because it was a historically black college, there was a lot of emphasis on black women writers of all kinds and genres. I remember I took an honors philosophy class, and you know, we read what everyone else reads in their philosophy classes, but we also read Black Feminist Thought by Patricia Hill Collins. And I was introduced to Toni Cade Bambara and Audre Lorde. And those writers, again, just spoke from authentic experiences that really resonated with me. And so, yeah, I just carried that with me. And in law school, it's interesting because I see cases, you look at a case, it's essentially a story, right? Someone's going about their day, they go into the supermarket, they happen to slip on a banana, and then, you know, then the law comes in, right? But these cases are essentially stories. And so that's how I viewed the law as well. We're telling stories, and through judicial opinions, I think in response, we're also getting an idea of, okay, what are some of our boundaries and parameters in our society as well? tell? And what kind of narrative, public narrative, are we telling through these legal opinions?
You're here for 2 weeks. I don't know if you can have a plan for when you have an opportunity like this, but what do you hope is accomplished by the end of the 2 weeks?
I want to do, so my ultimate goal is to do a book of essays, personal essays, just about my experiences working on civil rights issues, my experience just as a Black woman in this country, just reflections and stories. But I'm trying to manage my expectations for the 2 weeks I get that I can't do a full book of essays. So at least tweaking a couple of drafts that I already have, working on a couple of others, and then just outlining and thinking through maybe a couple more.
What would be an example of an experience that you would write about in an essay?
Wow. So one essay that was actually published, but I would still like to have as part of this collection. It seems like such a mundane experience, but it really just triggered so much in terms of my own memories. I live in Washington, D.C., and I take a kind of tunnel system to get from the train to the building where I live. And so I'm walking through these tunnels, and they have like little tourist shops and things like that. And there were some tourists in the tunnel, and I remember the father was quite loud, and I assumed it was a family, a father, and I assumed this figure was the father who, and there were about teenage, I think, age children, and he looked, I'll never forget, he kind of looked back at me and saw me, and I was just maybe a few steps behind them. And I remember, and so this was a few years ago, around 2016-ish, 2017, and I remember him saying, yeah, that's why that kid was killed. It was non-compliance. And I don't even know if he used the word, said the name Trayvon Martin, but he said enough to let me know that's what he was talking about. And then he said very loudly, I teach my kids to comply with the police so that there are no, they don't have any problems. And he presented as white. I assumed that he was white. And normally I don't respond to things like that, or I know that when, especially when people are loud like that and they're, you know, they're kind of looking to engage you, and it can get very negative very fast. But at the time I had just been working as an attorney with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and I had traveled out to Ferguson after the killing of Mike Brown. And I had actually met Trayvon Martin's parents and heard them speak. They were sharing about the book they wrote about their trial and their experience. And I couldn't be silent. And I said, it's not about compliance. You can comply, and it doesn't matter. And by the way, the man who killed him was not a police officer. He was not an official person. And you know, he, I remember the guy kind of, you know, kind of was just pulled back a little bit. And then he said, well, you know, I don't agree with that, and I know. And somehow he brought up this the fact that he had served his country, and he said that I'm a good American, I served my country. And I said, well, my father was a U.S. Marine, he served his country as well, and I know other Black people who likewise did. And at that point, a woman, an older woman who was with him, intervened and started yelling at me and gesturing wildly. And I just remember it just brought up so much of those years and the killings, and thinking about these young men, thinking about how Michael Brown's body laid in the street for hours after he was killed, thinking about Trayvon's parents and when they were talking about identifying his body at the morgue, how his leg was twisted underneath his body because he had been struggling underneath this man who shot him in the chest. And it all just came up for me. And somehow I kept walking, I turned the corner, I saw this woman standing there, a complete stranger, I have no idea who she was. And I just started crying. And I said, you know, some people don't see us as human beings. And this stranger just embraced me and hugged me and was just very comforting. And she just kept saying, I know, I understand. And she was a Black woman as well. I have no idea how much time actually passed. I looked up, the family was nowhere in sight. This woman gave me her name and her cell number and said, you know, be careful getting home. Let me know you made it back safely. And so she left. I went home, which was only a couple more minutes, and looked her up by her name. Turns out she was this decorated Secret Service agent. And I always wondered if she had been there kind of watching as this exchange had taken place. But I was so thankful for just her presence and her comfort and acknowledging that pain. And one thing I wrote in that essay was I said, I had been mourning without even realizing it. Like I had been hearing about these deaths of these young Black men and, it, you know, just not realizing what I had been carrying with me until it became triggered by that exchange with that man in the tunnel.
Janelle George is the recipient of the Illuminating Black Lives Fellowship from the Writers' Colony at Dairy Hollow in Eureka Springs. Tomorrow's workshop, Story as Memorial, Writing to Remember, begins at 2 p.m. at the Fayetteville Public Library. Registration is full, but you can join a waitlist at faylib.org. Janelle George spoke with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums this week in Eureka Springs.